Hi, I'm thinking of getting another tattoo to go with my raging dragon one.
Sure. What are you looking for?
Well, maybe something like a...
Bunnies! He wants a row of bunny rabbits with twitchy noses.
Your vote is your voice, so don't let others decide for you.
All holding giant flowers.
Who's that?
Ella. She works in the bank next door.
Make sure you're registered to vote. Go to checktheregister.ie and be a voter so that it's your voice that's heard. From Am Comisiún Toghcháin, Ireland's Independent Electoral Commission.
Too cute. And write Sarah on it.
Cute? I'm a martial arts champion. And my boyfriend's name is Jack.
Seachtain, an Indo as Gaeilge.
Time I mon iarrachtaí a dhéanamh teacht ar a chorp. Agus súlagam amach an seo, gur féidir é a chur in uaig ceart lena bhaintear féin.
Scíltaí, fios, tuairimí.
Tá sé dochreite nach bhféadfach ara i gcuirna meáin an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam a gnám go raibh orthcháir na reachtam. Iadach sé tarraing go raibh an orthcháir san i lis dúthail agus gimine fanacht gór a chlig sár ducha sin éachar. Ná ní bhin ann tar d'oraach sin, bhin marav.
Seachtain, find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Left Wing with me, Sinead Cassan. Well, that's it. Ireland have finished last in the table in this Women's Six Nations after Saturday's 36-10 defeat to Scotland. Five games, five huge defeats, 0 points on the board. Now, Ireland also finished pointless and bottom of the table in 2004 and 2002, but this year's was the greatest points difference with minus 167 to make it the worst finish ever for Ireland in the Women's Six Nations. Now, Anna Capeless and Ali Donnelly are here. Thank you both for joining me on this bank holiday Monday to talk about this really gloomy situation that the Ireland women's team are in. I remember talking to Philip Goose Doyle back in March. We were doing the 10-year anniversary podcast to celebrate Ireland's Grand Slam win 10 years ago. And he predicted that this Women's Six Nations was going to be a tough one. And he was proved right. Anna, would you agree in many ways that this wooden spoon finish was always coming for this team?
Yeah, I think a few people predicted that. And I think I heard that prediction last year as well. And, you know, somehow I always found like Ireland had a way of winning and a way like of grinding out some win, you know, even despite the challenges, which they did last year. And like there was a part of me for, you know, the first half of the game, I was like, they're going to do it again. You know, they're going to somehow, despite all the, you know, predictions of a wooden spoon, they're going to grind out a win here. And then obviously, you know, it slipped away in the second half. So it's not a new prediction either. And that's, you know, it's sad because that's coming off, you know, years of feeling this way. You know, it's not a new feeling. It's not a huge shock. It has been coming.
Yeah, Ali, you were both actually in Twickenham on Saturday. I mean, record-breaking crowd to watch England lift the Grand Slam, gorgeous weather. And then there's Ireland. I mean, Ali, you know your women's rugby history. Where does this wooden spoon and where Ireland are at now, where does this low rank for you?
Look, I think given the success we had in the last decade, you know, 2013, 14, 15, it's probably up there as one of the lowest moments because prior to, you know, the point at which we won something, we were, you know, a team that was always kind of second bottom. And so we were starting to grow. Whereas now we've experienced that high, it does make it very hard to swallow. I think in terms of the question you asked, Anna, so it's interesting because when we came into this competition, we didn't really know where we were at. I wonder if the Six Nations had been in the old window in kind of Feb, March, if the World Cup impact, there might have been a bit of fatigue and there might have been
greater, yeah.
Teams had that break. So I think the one good thing you can take away is we know exactly where we're at now. There's no kind of like, oh, maybe we're Scotland are, maybe we're not. We're quite far away actually from those teams. You know, we weren't competitive over 80 minutes in any of the games. We were competitive in patches. So at least we know where we're at. But yeah, I think watching the game at Twickenham, just a different level in terms of both the quality of play and the environment and infrastructure. And then Anna and I bumped into each other in a local pub and the Ireland game was on and there was Irish people there. And, you know, somebody, an ex-England player said to me, look, Ireland are winning. You know, I was like, ha ha, you know, it's 3-0 at this point. And I sort of, my heart sank because you felt like, God, I know that's a joke, but that's, it's almost like a, like someone's just kind of laughing. And I sort of laughed along. And of course, we didn't go and win the game. So I feel like we are at a, are we at an all-time low? Maybe. But I think it's just after the success we've had, it makes it hard to swallow.
Yeah, and for two women who have been so invested in Irish women's rugby, like, what were those feelings, you know, even waking up Sunday morning, yesterday morning? I know I woke up and I was like, where to now? What next? Like, how did that make ye feel, as I say, as two women who've been so invested in Irish women's rugby?
It really came to me, like, when the crowd was singing in Twickenham on Saturday, it was such a great event, you know, and you're there, and even like the walk up to the stadium, and it was really an amazing day for like women's sport and women's rugby. And like when the crowd was singing, I just had this like pang of sadness, like we could have this and we are nowhere near it. And you know, I'm here like celebrating this along with everyone else. It's such a great day. How could we be so far away from this? And, you know, to reflect on it, I had the kind of the same feeling last week when we were talking about England and we were like, God, you know, Ireland didn't do too bad. And then you look at all the scores and Ireland are scoreless and, you know, 48-0 against England. And you're like, that wasn't too bad. Like, how did it get to this? And how did it get to a part where all of the other teams are celebrating successes, sold out crowds, you know, big results, like climbing all the time. Obviously, you know, Italy will be disappointed with some of their results, and that's obviously going with the ebb and flow. But in terms of like across the board, everyone's going somewhere except for us, it seems. Now, and I know, look, this is, it's been said, right, this is going to be year one and this is where we're starting from. Fine, yeah, we know where we're at, but it doesn't make it any easier to enjoy this whole experience when we know we're just so far behind.
Yeah, I'd echo that. And I think for me, it's just one of frustration, because the, you know, the wake up call should have been 2017 World Cup World Performance. Then, you know, there seems to be constant false stones. And yeah, it's why I treat with great skepticism this kind of narrative of this is year one.
I agree totally. You know, yeah, it feels like ground zero to me. It doesn't feel like year one.
No, exactly. 2017, poor, terrible, you know, World Cup results in a way at home. That was kind of year one. From there on in, right, let's build to the next World Cup. Then we failed to qualify, you know, the performances this year, et cetera, et cetera. So nothing seems to, you know, the RFU privately will say they feel frustrated themselves at the way in which sort of some of this is playing out and that they're not getting enough credit for things they're doing behind the scenes. But I just think it's hard to have, and I saw Jen Murphy say this really passionately and eloquently after the game, it's hard to keep having faith that things are going to change, because we've just been on this trajectory. I don't know if anyone's done a graph of the decline in the national team's kind of fortunes 2017, but it will only show it going in one direction. So for me, the overriding sense is frustration. We have great athletes. We always talk about, we do produce good athletes in Ireland, and they're not really been given the opportunity to fulfill their potential. So that is a huge frustration. I didn't feel actually we could have what England had. I think they're ahead of everyone in the kind of infrastructure environment, but we're quite far behind Scotland and Wales now, which is really frustrating. You know, that they're the teams we should be mixing with, and we're not.
Mm-hmm. And that's the really tough thing. It's the fact that other teams who we would have been competing against, beating, they are now running away from us.
Yeah, quite significantly. I mean, I think Scotland pulling away in the last 20 is an indication, I think, of the difference in the journey. So what happens if you lose a game in the last 20, it's usually fatigue, lack of experience, lack of nous. It was tight until then. So they're quite far away. You know, I was saying to someone, it's like if you're looking at a series of mountains, we're like five behind. And we're sort of like at the foot of one, and other people are at the top of the fifth one. And, you know, Scotland would never, they would have been just next to us, or, you know, this is a terrible analogy. I'm sorry. I should have thought of this more. But, you know, it's just that sense of like, we shouldn't be this far behind Scotland and Wales and Italy in particular.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's just briefly look back at Scotland before looking at the broader picture again. I mean, no late escape this time for Ireland against Scotland. We remember what happened in Belfast last year. Ireland were in the game. Nicola Friday scored a try, her second in this year's competition. She's the only Irish player to score a try in this competition. Obviously, there was that penalty try in Parma. But then, of course, as you say, Ali, the way that Scotland finished, six tries overall, some of them, you know, really good tries, a 36-0 win. Trying to get the bonus point win for Ireland, look, was always going to be a huge ask, and a really, when they going into this game. But like when, especially when they'd only scored, you know, two tries from open, or one try from open play in this tournament so far, it was always going to be a huge ask.
Yeah, especially when, you know, you look back and you know, fair play to Nicola for getting over the line, but like to have no other players score a try is, oh, that's disappointing for the team. You know, it's such a great, you know, any day you get to play, but to score a try for your country is like, is, you know, an amazing thing to achieve. And, you know, to only have one player across the whole tournament achieve that. And then what we needed was a bonus point win with tries. Like that was going to be a huge ask. You're absolutely right. So coming into the game, and like, you know, the media, you know, they asked the players a lot about it in the run up to it. Like, do you think that this is, you know, achievable or whatever? And, you know, they gave the right answers in terms of, we can only focus on ourselves, and we're not going to be like chasing tries. We're just going to look for the performance, because the thing is, like, there were so many times where, you know, it looked like they were building something good, even like in the first half against Scotland as well. I felt like, whoa, they're really getting on the front foot here in a lot of areas, and nice wide passes, like hitting the gaps in the middle of the pitch, and it looked really good. But the same theme in terms of like, now what, you know, kind of off the pitch and on the pitch, you're like, now what? Where do we go from here? Just no way of finishing it off. And, you know, to get a try, you know, and to get over the line, like, fair play. But they did, you know, they're like working towards something, and then no one has any answers. And that's, you know, to get one try was good, you know, and we're here like, oh, well, fair play, you know, getting one try. That's just a reflection of how far behind we are.
So, Anne, is that down to coaching, or is it down to, if we're looking at the backs, the inexperience there, what's that down to in particular?
I don't think you could put your finger on one thing. The inexperience, yeah. The coaching, yeah. The lack of time together, yeah. All these things, I don't know, is one heavier than the other in across the board, but you know, the girls certainly feel like we're focused on this, this and this. They felt like they had, you know, real kind of like things to focus on going into the game, and in their match weeks, they seem to be kind of happy with what they were focusing on. So, you know, you can't tell from outside if that's the right thing, or what they're choosing to work on is good or accurate. It just didn't transfer into scoring tries.
Again, we did some really good stuff, but in the end, it comes down to, for me, to experience and ability to play at the level. So we do have a very young team, and there were some, you know, good performances we could pick out in that first 40. But I think the problem for us is the girls are having to learn on a very unforgiving stage. And I think that just is very difficult. There's more eyeballs. We talked about this earlier in the podcast, more eyeballs on the game, more scrutiny and more pressure. And it's hard. What you really want is for the girls to be getting to the international stage, having, you know, through a pathway which has kind of helped them to develop the skills, technical, mental, you know, skills to perform in that spotlight. And we haven't had that. So the only thing I'd add that Anna hasn't mentioned, because I agree with everything there, it's hard to pick one thing, is Italy apart, I think the difference between us and most of the teams is the quality of the kind of pathway domestic competitions that they're, you know, spitting out from are better. We might come on to that in a minute. We talk about what next. So, the you know, Ireland are taking a group of girls and having to try and make them good enough for international rugby, whereas other countries are taking girls who are right on the cusp and are playing really competitive, and then they're tweaking, finessing, using tactics and planning and so on and so forth, and finding their own style. Whereas actually it feels to me like the Irish coaches are probably having to almost go back to basics with a lot of these players at this level. And the problem we have now is, at one point or other, four or five teams were at that case. You always had a chance of winning games against the teams in and around you. That isn't the case anymore. And so the catch up and the lag is much more significant. So I think I'd add that to the mix, and that is not going to get any easier.
Yeah, well, let's get into that now, Ali, because it does really feel like, you know, Irish rugby for the home base players is just like falling off a cliff now. There's nothing. The England-based players will go back to their clubs, but there is no rugby now for the home-based players. We don't know. There's some talk that maybe there might be a few summer tests put on for the Ireland players, but there might not be anything until that new global competition later this year. I mean,
when you think about like what next, I think one of the things I'd really like to hear, I know the RFU are planning to kind of come out and talk this week.
Yeah, they are.
So really like to hear about that. So we, you know, it's not where it's, if something isn't working, which this isn't currently, you have to take a step back and say, like, how can we make adjustments and change this? And I think having a domestic league, which is not of the best quality for preparing athletes for international rugby, finish in December. The Celtic Challenge Cup is not the one. You know, Wales and Scotland put out B and C teams, and our interpros are just this one-off thing that happens as standard. I don't think was that good this year. I only got to watch a few games. So our pathway is not helping us to produce, you know, the quality of test players that we need. So what are we going to do about that? It looks like we're going to put a lot of eggs in the Celtic Challenge basket again next year. Looks, we're talking about putting two teams in there. Is that going to work? It doesn't seem like it will, because the other teams are not going to commit and invest in that way. So there's a really interesting question I'm sure someone will put to Kevin or David or whoever's up about, do you think you have this right? And what would you do to change that? So that to me is a huge problem for us, where the system that is producing the players isn't delivering and doesn't look like it can deliver, given what we know in terms of how people are going to be taking those competitions seriously. I presume, by the way, that the RFU might know that, and that's why they tried to centralise all the players together in Dublin so they could really accelerate their learning. But these things just aren't quite, the pieces of the jigsaw aren't fitting together. So fascinated to see what we do with that.
Yeah, what do you think, Anna? I mean, we had the women's AIL finishing before Christmas last year. I don't think we quite know yet, like, what the structure of the league will be for next year, for next season coming. And I don't know how fast those changes will be made to put Ireland in a more competitive situation in the Women's World Cup. We must also remember that the next World Cup, you know, is coming into view as well next year in 2025.
Yeah, and that's all hugely important, and you're right. So the next decisions they make have to be, it has to be right. They have to get it right now. There's no more time for fluffing around. And like, to talk about the league just for a second, you know, I completely agree. We need more games and in terms of like player development, but going back to like the player herself, like, and the personal coming out of a Six Nations now, very tough Six Nations campaign, any girl that played in the Six Nations, doesn't matter what country, going back into your club is an amazing feeling. You go back to kind of what you know, who you know, you get to express yourself, you get to be around, you know, people you love and people that love you and who know your story. And what that's not there now for these girls, because yeah, the league is done, there's no interpros. What are they going to do now? I know myself, you know, if you're struggling and if you've come out of a tournament like that and you go back into your club, like, you need that. So it's not even just about the playing opportunities, like, in terms of, like, you know, skill and development. Like, personally, as a person, you need it. You need your club. Your club needs you, like, and to have it, you know, finished back before Christmas and now what? Yeah. That's a huge loss on many fronts. So, you know, the next decisions they make, yes, they have to be with the World Cup in mind, with the WXV in mind, all these things, but also with the players in mind, like, keep the players, like, close to their club and their province, whichever way they're going to decide to do it, you know, make that key to it, you know, make your club and your province and where you're from key to this journey as well.
This was the first year for the introduction of contracts. We know this is a kind of a moving target, as it were, that this could change as we go along. There was the issue that was brought up earlier about maybe the introduction of hybrid contracts. Mm-hmm. So what way should the RFU now look at this, Ali, in terms of the contracts? And, we, you know, we've seen other nations that it's taken them a while to develop this this area of the game. So how do you think that the RFU can improve this now?
Yeah, I think we have to introduce hybrid contracts, and I'm sure that will happen. I think as well, for me, I've never felt the centralisation of the players in Dublin in a 15s programme would work. It worked for Sevens for other obvious reasons and doesn't work for this. So I'd like to see, you know, a kind of decentralization of power and influence and structure toward back towards the provinces in whatever way they want to do that. Yeah, and I think you're right. Other countries, it's been a bumpy journey, and we've used that word quite a lot. At the same time, some of the decisions that we made around the worth of the salaries and the lack of hybrid, it was obvious from the get-go that was never going to work. And I don't know what sort of thinking was going on internally around the doing that. So I think that's what's frustrating. You know, the RFU will come, no doubt, to this event this week, this media event, armed with new things, because they know it's going to be tough, right? They're going to have to sit there and answer some tough questions. What I hope is that whatever new things, for want of a better phrase, are being introduced, whether it's money, resources, it's structures, etc., they aren't knee-jerk. They are in being introduced in light of, you know, the difficulties of this year and in light of knowing they've made mistakes in terms of the structure, and they've really, truly, truly engaged with people on the ground. So not just a couple of people who've been kind of co-opted onto Women's Committee, but actually all those people running the game around the country. So I'd really like to see that. The other kind of less, like a softer point I want to make about what I'd like to see this week is I'd really like the tone in which the RFU deliver whatever messages they have and whatever announcements to be different. So, you know, I talked last week about communications and about being less defensive, etc. I hope that Kevin and others can say, I understand there is enormous frustration at everyone involved in the women's game at what's happened this championship, that we finished bottom or worst finish in nearly 20 years. We only scored, you know, one try or two tries or whatever it was. And we are working, we're all part of a collective purpose, because what I do not see really happening is the kind of an acceptance that there is a big ecosystem of stakeholders. We might all have different views about how to get there, and ultimately they take the decisions. I totally recognize that. But a recognition that actually we're all on the same journey here, and your view matters, and your view matters, and we're going to listen to you. So I'd just like to see a shift in tone, because there's an awful lot of distrust throughout the system, and that needs to sort of go away because it doesn't help anyone. So I'd love that. And just lastly, sorry, this turned into a total.
Go on.
Is one of the things, and I don't like to compare us too much to England because it isn't comparable in lots of ways. But I think one of the things they really nailed at the weekend was that the kind of sense that there was a community around this game and this big event, and everybody was included. And a hugely, like, significant part of that were all the ex-players. So there's a huge focus on previous Red Rose. They did lots of events in and around the games. So I think we're missing a bit of that. And, like, we could really do with a nice bit of feel good. We're on this journey together. So I will be watching what is said and how it is said with great interest.
Yeah, and I think it was a good question that Joe Molloy on Virgin Media asked Jenny Murphy after the game on Saturday, was the trust issue. Everything that Ali has said there, do you trust that the RFU will do this and will make these changes?
I don't have the trust, because I think that would be naive of me to say that, okay, I think they'll do the right thing now. And that comes from experience, you know, and what we've been through. Like, that's not me being, you know, oh, I hate these guys. That's not it. Mm-hmm. It's because of what we've been through, what I've been through as a player, and what I, you know, where the squad is now and everything that we've been through in the last few years. I absolutely agree with Ali. And that's what I'm, like, yearning for, you know, for the RFU to come forward and deliver that message exactly and bring us together somehow. Like, we are all on the same page. We all want the same thing. We understand the frustrations. We want to move forward together. I've heard some good things about some, you know, about Kevin Potts, and that's really nice to hear. I'd love to see it, like, delivered back, because at the moment it seems like everyone's being pitted against each other, you know, and it's, you know, the former players or the supporters and the protest and this, it's all, you know, it's not a bad thing. Everyone wants the same thing. Everyone wants, you know, the good things to start happening. That's why people are so passionate about it. It's a good thing. Like, let's refocus it. And I can't agree more with Ali than I'd love to hear from the RFU. Okay, this is where we're at. Let's do it together, and let's, like, take in all the we've taken on everything. We hear what you're saying. Please trust us now, because we hear you. And that's where my trust would come from now. If they had that reaction and they said, to us, you know, please trust us, because we have to, you know, we know we're going to get things wrong. We're really trying to get things right. And we understand, because I think denying, you know, because that's how it's felt till now. No, there's no problems. This is historical. These don't exist. That's not been the right approach. It's kind of fueled for me more frustration, because I don't think, you know, the journey up to now has been respected. So, yeah, I completely agree with Ali, and I'm like yearning for that message from the IRFU as well.
Yeah, because it does feel like history just keeps repeating itself in that way, doesn't it, Ali? Like, you know, let's move on, you know, let's really move on with it now and the way these things are handled.
100%. And I think the word Anna used there, like yearning, you know, it almost makes me sad for ex-players like Anna and the others who were on that panel you talked about. People are just desperate for this to progress. Mm-hmm. And I think there is goodwill. It's still in patches for Kevin and the team who are trying. I know, I don't doubt that at all. It's just, I think there's distrust about where and why they're putting resource in a certain way. So, yeah, I just feel like we're at a point where people are like, come on, let's stop all this division. Let's stop all this arguing. Let's stop all this finger pointing. Let's all get on this bus together and drive somewhere good. Let's drive to England and be all at the next World Cup, you know. Yeah, so
this has to be the tipping point. Like, this has to be it now.
Well, I mean, if the letter to the government.
The scary thing is, I think, is that, you know, like, this has to be the tipping point. I've said that to myself a number of times over the last few years. You know, this has to be rock bottom. This has to be it now. And somehow it's gotten worse. From here, I don't know how it could get worse. I suppose the only way it could get worse is if this continues, you know, and the same mistakes keep happening. But I've said that to myself, you know, when a lot of us have said it, like, this has to be it now. This has to be the turning point. This has to be the turning point. And it never has been. And that's where the distrust comes from.
Yeah. No. I mean, look, not being at a World Cup and then finishing bottom of the Six Nations as your two sort of recent back-to-back achievements in inverted commas, it is hard to see it getting worse. And you do have a union which has been very successful in one aspect of the sport. Yeah. So it is hard, as Anna says, to have a load of faith that they'll take the right decisions. But at the same time, you know, these are very credible, competent people. And I think hopefully this moment allows people just a little bit of space to say, all right, well, look, what we're doing isn't working. It is not working. We are rock bottom of the Six Nations. Thank goodness there isn't relegation for this particular competition, because we'd be out of it. And some things need to change. So I think, again, let's just see where we get to this week.
But the reality is as well that we are going to be on the back foot, because Ireland will be in tier 3 of the new WXV competition. Like, the likelihood is, well, it depends on who wins the playoff for tier 2 between Italy and Spain. If Italy win, then all of our Six Nations opponents will be in either tier 1 or tier 2. I mean, at the start of the Six Nations, there were questions being asked of the Ireland team, you know, is making tier 1 an ambition? And it wasn't. Ended up in tier 3. The fact of the matter is, Anna, that, like, Ireland, you know, will get better, but our opponents will get better at a faster rate against superior opposition.
Yeah, and that's a bit scary, actually, because I was thinking, you know, when I was reading about it, I was like, oh, well, if we just top tier 3, then we'll go up into tier 2. But that's not the case. It will always depend on our Six Nations result. So coming back to Six Nations next year, when, you know, we've been playing against, you know, if it's, you know, if Spain is the other European team, I've had a look at it, like, who potentially, like, going on, like, rankings and stuff, like, possibly Samoa, possibly Kenya, possibly Hong Kong, possibly Colombia. And they're all kind of, none of those are confirmed yet. Ireland would beat all of those teams. How does that push us to get better? I'm not sure.
That means, I think, though, that, so this competition is going to be played in September, October. I think then what happens, and back to our earlier point, for the Irish players or the top players in Ireland between sort of November and April going to that next Six Nations is crucial. How best in that window can you continue to build? Because we will win some games there, which is, you know, we do need to win some games. So that'll be good in one way. But I think we're back to this, like, is what's currently plotted for that window, which is currently the Celtic Challenge competition, which, you know, we know that Wales and Scotland are using as a development. We're using it as our prep for the Six Nations. Is that going to be right? And when Ireland look at the whole season and think about how do we produce the best players for that Six Nations? Because as you say, Anna, the Six Nations needs to continue to go well for us. It doesn't matter what almost happens in the WXV. That's our problem. It's that window there in between the two things. Is that, you know, in that window, are we going to have the right competitions? And it, currently, no. And that's a problem. And the other thing, of course, is although the World Cup has expanded to 16 teams, and they're all, you know, but there are specific places for each region. If you're playing in the bottom tier, you know, for the next couple of years, you know, qualification is by no means, I always said, we'll definitely be at the next World Cup. There's 16 teams going. But now, I need to have a look at the pathway again, but you still need to be playing in playoff games. So, you know, that's a problem for maybe the next year, but that also makes that path harder.
Okay, everything just...
we should talk about some good things. Can I say a good thing?
What?
The spine of our team is very promising, right? So I was thinking about this morning. If you look at, say, right from props to fullback, you got Linda, Sam, Nicola, Derv. You've got Dana, Aoife Dalt and Aoife Doyle. There's a core group of very talented players.
Lauren Delaney, I thought, has really grown into this tournament.
I should have mentioned her. But, you know, there's five or six players there who I think are, you know, if with a fair win behind us, could be amongst the best in their positions or there or thereabouts in that middle tier of Six Nations, not England and France. So there's, with the right structures, the right support, the right morale, the right kind of coaching and so on, we definitely can, you know, reduce the gap between Scotland, Wales and Italy. So there's, you do emerge with some sense of, all right, look, we've got some talented players there who, with all of those things around them, you know, could help us bridge the gap. So it's not all without hope, I think. It's
Anna, give us some, give us some of your positivity. Give us something.
I agree with Ali. And I was also thinking about this morning. And like, usually after a Six Nations, you know, the team has changed a lot because of the introduction of sevens or withdrawal of sevens players or whatever. This squad went through the whole thing themselves without that interruption. That will stand to the group. And completely agree with Ali on the core group of players that are there. They're brilliant. And they're some of the best, like they already were, despite Ireland's performance, like some of the best performers in the tournament.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of like tackle count, dominant tackles, line breaks, meters made, things like that. Like Ireland were up there in a lot of those stats. So Ali's absolutely right. And, you know, the journey that they've been on, they've all said it, you know, if you look at their Instagrams or what they've been posting, like their messages are positive coming from the squad. They really have each other's backs. This journey will have made them so much stronger. As long as, you know, as long as they're using the learnings from it, which I trust that the players will. So I think that is a positive thing, that like there's a lot of learnings. It was the same group the whole way through, you know, and not this kind of like, okay, there's another player coming in to take your position now. So that player herself is a bit like, oh God, what did I do wrong? How do I change this? Even though it's just kind of the way it's been like the last few years, that's how that we've managed the Six Nations by trying to feed both squads in sevens and 15s. So I liked the management just trusted it, because there's a lot of questions like, will they bring in the sevens? Will they bring in sevens? And they were like, no, we're going with what we have. And they stood by them, and that's good. And they'll be certainly better and stronger players and people for it.
Well, on that, like Greg McWilliams did bring up unprompted a few times about the fact that the sevens players weren't there. And I wonder if they had wrapped up qualification in Hong Kong, would a few of them have come into the squad, for the final few weekends? Obviously, their qualification goes down to the wire against Toulouse. And I just want to ask you, I know we brought this up in an earlier podcast, but we have to talk about the head coach. For some reason, I don't know why, but the duration of his contract wasn't revealed by the RFU when he was announced as a head coach in November 2021. But I understand that it finishes at the end of this calendar year. So look, obviously a difficult time, you know, but overall in his two Six Nations, two wins out of five games last year, no wins out of five this year. there are the mitigation factors of the Sevens players not being available, which, as I say, he raised himself unprompted a few times during the Six Nations. Is he the right man for this job?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. You know, on paper, and if it was kind of any other sport, you'd be like, no, absolutely not. And, you know, heads will roll and this kind of chat when you've had a you know, a campaign as such as that. I don't know.
Ali.
Is my honest answer. I actually don't know. I don't know what to say. I don't know him as a coach. I was never coached by him, so I can't comment on that. I don't know what he's like. So there's nothing I can say that's not just kind of speculation from the outside.
But in terms of how you see the team being coached,
I think there'll inevitably be some kind of review of the Women's Six Nations. I think that might throw up, you know, what's actually happened inside. When we're not on the pitch, we don't know how the team's been coached, but there have been some fundamental things that have improved. So our scrum got better, etc. Yeah. And then other things, that whole whack-a-mole we talked about. I think he probably, the pressure certainly felt like it was getting to him. So some of the things he said during the course of the championship, I thought were strange. I really didn't like the father comment, for example. I thought that showed a real lack of understanding about, you know, how to kind of communicate as an international coach and how you might come across and what that would do. So I think there's some challenges there, but I think, well, let's see what the review says. I think he probably does deserve to be there for the WXV to, you know, help Ireland to get some victories and go in there. Changing your coach now, I'm not sure the RFU would do that. I can't imagine that that's on the card. So, you know, let's see what the review says. Let's see how they get on the WXV later this year. And I suspect he has at least one more Six Nations in him. It would be different, I think, if we were another year down the line and we were bottom again and we weren't seeing improvements. There are mitigating factors, as you've said, but certainly I felt, sort of watching the things that he said and the way in which he's tried to, you know, position it, it's kind of uncomfortable at times and a little bit naive, I think is probably the word. I think he's obviously a good guy, right? I don't doubt that. But a little bit of naivety, which at this level of the game, you know, you can't afford to be like that, because actually what you're saying, given all the eyeballs on you, has also got an impact on the perception and the kind of the culture in and around the team, or the perceived culture. So I'm not giving you a definite answer either, but I think he should stay on, do this at WXV, and I'm sure they'll review his contract at the end of the year then.
Yeah. So just finally, before we wrap, if there was one thing in particular that you would like to see changed to enable Ireland to be better for next year's Women's Six Nations, you know, what would it be? It's a bit of a broad one, I know.
Yeah. It's hard, isn't it? To be like, okay, this or this.
One thing.
What I would like to say is like the pathway, so the league, you know, just like turn around and you know, and focus on the league for next year, make enough games, have it, you know, last across the year. But think the plan is already made for not prioritizing the league. So I think my suggestion is redundant, because I don't think that's on the cards. But that's what I would like to see. I'd like to see more, like we talked about already, the pathway into it, more competitive games. And that's obviously not an achievable thing overnight either, but that is what I'd like to see.
Yeah, I think pathway for me is the key thing. I'd really like a kind of compelling and proactive kind of, you know, argument given by the IRFU to say, this is our plan and this is what we're going to do to make things better. And even if we don't agree with that, at least it would be decisive and you'd say, all right, benefit of the doubt here, let's see where we go. Because Sinead, I don't know if you have this experience. This is not about bashing the RFU, right? They've had enough of that, I think. But I think there's an interesting thing that happens when you're writing about or commentating on the women's game. The most convincing arguments you get from the RFU are all off the record when they call you up and explain things to you. And I always say, why aren't you out there saying this? Like, this is like very good, very, there's some strategic intent there. I might not agree with, you know, all the decisions that you're making, but at least it looks decisive. And so I think I'd like to see a kind of compelling, coherent, decisive plan laid out. You're either with us or you're not. That's fine. We accept there will always be detractors, but this is what we think the right thing to do is, and this is why. As opposed to no one really knowing, someone gets a call here, someone gets a call there. Just own it. Own it. And I'd like to see that.
Okay, well, fingers crossed for all of those. Lads, it's been a long, tiring, tough Women's Six Nations. But thank you so much for your insight and your expert analysis and your emotion about it all during this tournament. Thanks a million.
Thanks, Sinead.
Now, Will and Luke will be here on Wednesday to review Leinster's fantastic win over Toulouse in the Heineken Champions Cup semi-final as Leinster march on to another European Cup final with Ronan O'Gara's La Rochelle later this month. Thanks for listening.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.